The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management or staff of Radio Kingston, WKNY. AM 1490, FM 1079, Kingston, New York.
Myself to you completely.
Good morning. It is Saturday at 10 a.m. and you're listening to Radio Kingston, and that means that it's time for some Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland, and I'm delighted to be joining you live in the studio with special guests today for our one-year anniversary episode. This Saturday is exactly a year to the date from when we launched this program. So we've done a full cycle of the seasons, and for folks who may not yet be familiar with the show, the purpose of this program is to celebrate and explore the incredible natural world that we have around us, you know, amidst sort of the endless stream of dark and shocking news about politics and environmental destruction and the climate crisis. It feels more important than ever to give our attention to the amazing biodiversity, the incredible creatures, the vibrant ecosystems that are thriving all around us in dynamic ways. And that's true whether you take a gonzo hike up to the top of a Catskills Peak, or if you're walking down the street here in on Broadway in Midtown Kingston. There are always something and someone doing something interesting right at hand that if we slow down just a little bit and look around, the birds and the bugs and the salamanders and the trees will come into sharper focus and start to reveal their mysterious ways. So I know for myself that taking time to put down my phone, walk outside, and observe the natural world is the single biggest thing I can do for my own mental health. And I think that's fairly universal among us human beings. And of course, this works both ways, because at this point, the natural world needs us to pay attention and take some care because obvious reasons. And so this show is sort of founded on a fundamental idea that people won't fight for what they don't love, and they can't love what they don't know. So I will introduce both of our guests, but we have joining us for the third time in the past year, a good friend of the program, Brianna K. O'Cotter. Thank you for coming in today, Brianna.
Thank you. I'm so excited.
And Brianna, as a voluntary executive producer, she suggested that I do a little quick review of some of the kind of highlight episodes, because we're homing in. We've missed a couple over the years, so we're homing in on 50 episodes, and I wanted to really highlight the kind of breadth and diversity of folks we've had. So, you know, one of the amazing things about this region, besides the fact that we have such great, you know, biodiversity and ecosystem, you know, abundance, we also have an incredible human ecosystem of academics and artists and conservationists and people who have developed different levels of expertise in different parts of the natural world. And so over the past year, this show has been a wonderful forced excuse to reach out every week and find somebody doing something cool, and then ask them, who else should I talk to? And that has, you know, led us to bring on lots of folks. And we started, our very first episode was with Matt and Maddie from Riverkeeper, talking about river ecology and dam removal. And then we've had, you know, lots of amazing research scientists and academics, you know, the directors of the Cary Institute of Ecosystem Studies has been on, director of Hudsonia has been on. And then sometimes we do deep dives into various things. We've had John Michelotti from Catskill Fungi, was an amazing guest. We've had the legendary Chris Bowser from DEC talk about a whole program on the wild life cycle of the American eel. He actually brought eels into the studio with him for the program. We've had like the world's foremost expert on koi wolves talk about the whole wild evolution of this potentially new species of canine that we're surrounded with here. And we've had lots of folks from Scenic Hudson talking about the amazing network of parks and preserves that Scenic Hudson operates, as well as urban ecology and the cool work that the River Cities program is doing throughout the valley. And one of my favorite shows was with Molly Adams, founder of Feminist Bird Club, who's, you know, working to get folks who maybe haven't previously identified with birding as being sort of their thing, to make it feel more accessible and like there's a place of belonging in the birding world for people of all kinds. We had some great filmmakers on for a whole program who did an entire documentary called Holding Back the Tide, which was this sort of anthem, queer anthem to the history of oysters in New York, which you really have to just see to see how much that actually really works. It's really a great film that they played at O Positive. And on and on. We've had shows that I recorded live when I was in the field down in Brooklyn for Climate Week in New York City. And in Cali, Colombia, during the United Nations Biodiversity Summit, and other things. We've talked about the Lenape cultural history and what it was like living here 500 years ago, moving through the seasons with Justin Wexler, who's the co-founder of Wild Hudson Valley, and on and on. We've talked about rewilding cougars, about foraging and feasting with Dina Falcone. And all of these episodes are archived on radiokingston.org. So you can kind of go through and choose a topic and listen to any part of it you want. And I'll wrap that part up because I would have to, it wouldn't be complete giving a review of sort of this past year without a huge shout out and thanks to Chris Baker, who has come on as an official co-host to the program. She just hosted all the Nature Nuggets episodes in February, most recently. And she's amazing. She's a mycophile and nature nerd extraordinaire herself, and also the founder and proprietor of Chicory Naturalist down on Rondout, the bottom of Broadway. And if you haven't been into Chicory Naturalist, I would say do yourself a favor. It's very, very cool shop. She's really built something special there. And there's gifts of all kinds. There's wonderful books. There's rotating art, nature-inspired art by local artists, and all kinds of practical naturalist things. You know, from binoculars to field guides, and more. So pop in and check that out. It's become a real hub of nature-loving folk for the region. All right, so with that as our opening and intro, I'm going to move us into section that we start every show with called Who's About Town. And, you know, sometimes I've described it as sort of like the society pages, of a small town paper, except for the more than human world. But it also could be called a phenological snapshot. And phenology is one of my favorite scientific terms, basically. Phenology means the study of the progression of the seasons. And so this time of year is a really exciting time in particular to watch because every single day there's an emergence of some new, you know, buds and birds and harbingers of spring. And so before I dive into that, and I will give a more proper introduction in a moment, I also want to just acknowledge our second guest in the studio and say thank you, Phil Green, for being here on this snowy Saturday morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I'm going to invite both of these two to share some of their Who's About Towns. But I, you know, right here in town, it's impossible to miss. The daffodils are up. The red maples are dropping their tiny little red flowers all over the forest floor and in the city, too. And we're starting to get, you know, buds on the trees and different blooms are happening. But one, the real marker of the season, because I remember highlighting this on the very first episode a year ago, was that the ospreys are back down at the mouth of the Rondout. And this is very cool. You know, they've chosen a very dramatic spot at the, building this 6-foot wide stick nest at the top of that rusty crane right at where the Rondout enters into the Hudson. So you can see it easily from the tip of Sleitsburg if you take that trail down below Port Ewan. But even from the Kingston side, there's a number of places you can stop and watch them. And they're so amazing. They've been coming back year after year. And this winter was pretty rough on that nest. There were just a handful of sideways pointing sticks. So they're busy snapping the treetops, the branches off of trees and bringing them over there, weaving them together. And so I think they're still in that mode. The ospreys travel from far away. Some of them can come all the way from, you know, deep in South America, some of them, you know, Argentina even. So the osprey have to get busy, you know, preparing that nest. But also very prevalent right now are the bald eagles. We were just out on the other side of the river in Dutchess County yesterday, and I don't know, we probably saw half a dozen eagles, multiple adults, multiple juveniles, and they start quite early. We've been talking about them on the show for weeks now. And so the there's one very celebrated bald eagle nest in the town of Poughkeepsie. It's labeled NY62. But that nest has had an incredible run across over 25 years, and 19 of those have produced nestlings. So they did have 6 failed seasons. But that female, whose nest that is, has produced 33 nestlings from 4 different nests in the towns of Wappinger and Poughkeepsie. And she's had to take on a new male. Her original mate was hit by a train in 2017. But for decades, she continues on. And so those chicks are now hatched, and I think they're 14 or 17 days old, so they're starting to be big enough to observe from a distance and making noise and bringing, you know, fish and to the chicks there. So the eagles are underway. And a couple other quick observations I'll share just from the past week of poking around the area. I had some really neat birds right here in Kingston this last week down at the Kingston Point Park. And one of the most exciting was I heard this just very distinctive, very exuberant, buoyant sort of song bursting from the top treetops. And I knew what it was, but had to get a look to confirm. And it was a brown thrasher, and who has one of the most extravagant songs of any bird. And they make up for it with their voice there, because otherwise they're sort of plain brown. But they're a bit of a short-distance migrant, which is how they can arrive earlier. So these birds that are showing up here probably made it down into the southeast, but probably didn't jump the Gulf. And so the fancy, you know, rainbow-colored tropical birds that do fly all the way to South America, they're still on their way. We haven't seen, you know, too many of the warblers and grosbeaks and orioles or those kind of things yet. But also down right at Kingston Beach, saw a pair of long-tailed ducks, which are very cool looking, extremely distinctive bird. They don't look like any other duck. And they're kind of hardcore. You know, these are birds that nest way, 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 way up in the top of the Arctic. You know, the very top of the planet you can go. And they come down through our region, you know, migration in both directions. And then they go out to sea, and they can live in the harshest, coldest, roughest water, this little fragile looking duck. And they are one of the best underwater hunters of any duck. When they're hunting, they'll spend 2/3 to 3/4 of their time underwater. And then they'll pop up, take a quick breath, and then dive back down. And so they're an incredibly aquatic, aggressive predator of a duck, which is amazing when you see one floating on the Hudson River and it just doesn't look like all that, because they're pretty ornate and beautiful. Let's see, a couple other notes. We have the Hook Mountain Hawk Watch, which I always love getting their reports. They've been doing volunteer hawk watching, for over 50 years. And it's been fun to watch the evolution of what they're reporting. So, you know, a few weeks ago, it was mostly just vultures. Then there started to be red-shouldered hawks coming in. But the high counts during this past week or two have been sharpshin hawks on one day, and American kestrels on the other day. So the species composition of our raptors is starting to change as they're streaming in from the south. And the way that they follow air currents and utilize updrafts to cover long distances, there's certain strategic points, high mountains, that you can go to at the right time of year and actually see the phenomenon of migration in action as these hundreds of hawks stream over going north, which is pretty cool because migration is often an invisible phenomenon until the birds just pop up in front of your face. Also, and then I'll give a moment and ask these two to weigh in, but I will say yesterday I was very excited. We went for a walk. I picked up Brianna from the train in Rhinecliff and went straight over to Ferncliff Preserve, which is a lovely little walk with a fire tower, some incredible views of the region. But one of the first things we saw popping up to the little lake that's there was a pair of tree swallows, and just beautiful, banking with their electric kind of vibrant blue in the sun. And I know that other people have been seeing them for a few days at least, but these were the first ones I had seen. And just, I can't think of a more poignant harbinger and marker of spring than the return of the swallows. So that felt very cool that that was on. And then also some of the swampy areas up and around Fern Cliff, the skunk cabbage is coming in strong, and their weird sultry purple little globe thermogenesis flowers are coming out at the base of those big, huge, luscious leaves, and they just instantly transform the swampy landscape from kind of the dreariness of winter into this green, lush, feeling lifescape. So that's a pretty dramatic shift and development. What do you, Brianna? Do you have any? Who's about towns to share from your observations recently?
Well, I have a poem. And then a little thought about this. Okay. But so the poem is "My Sexual Orientation is Spring," and it's by Kyla Jameson. And here is the poem. We change time, make the days longer. I start to forget the pact I made with unhappiness. Take myself to the ocean, say, I just need to catch the last few minutes of light. This is how spring is love, the way it pulls us towards pleasure. For me, that's the end of the poem. For me, spring becomes not just part of my my sexual orientation, but it's like becomes my identity and my religion. I become an evangelist the minute the first crocuses start peeping up at the botanic gardens near my home in Brooklyn. I go into the gardens and I snap pics of the daffodils going up on the hill and the first magnolia buds to friends and implore them to go there now. Last week, I bought a membership for a friend because I felt so strongly that he needed to be in, like, walking around the gardens and observing this. And I think that I get real philosophical around spring because it's, you walk and every single day there's something that is a little bit different and it changes and there's a bud here I was down south visiting family in Virginia and then DC and now I'm up in Kingston and I've basically come from your future, Kingston. Right now it feels wild to think that you're gonna have the blossom, cherry blossoms and all of those things in the snowy wintry morning, but it's coming. And the thing with spring is if you don't go see it, it's gone. And I guess that's what life is like as well. But it's like spring smacks the impermanence of life on you. Yeah. And so I just implore you, listener, to go out every day, even for a little moment, to go and find what new part of beautiful spring has arrived, whether that's the skunk cabbages and their like wildness in that mog or go by yourself or go with a friend and listen to the new bird arrivals, say hello, shove your face into a lilac bush when those start coming because they'll be gone. Yeah. And that's how I feel about spring.
Well, thank you for that. I think we could all use a little bit more of that in our lives. A little less of the news feed and a little more shoving faces and flowers. Phil, do you have any kind of observations of spring that you want to share for the Who's About Town?
Yeah, I think for me, maybe it's not, I don't feel it in such like a visceral way like you're describing, but there are these moments like the other day, I think it was a warmer day where I think I probably was just driving, but heading past an area where there's some swampland and hearing the peepers.
Yeah.
And that, like, there's a lot of nostalgia for me that is wrapped up in spring. And it's probably because of all of these ephemeral things that are coming and going. But hearing those peepers is always like, it brings me back to my childhood and thinking about just what's to come. So that's probably the most profound thing I've felt recently. I mean, I love foraging, and there's a fair number of ephemeral species that come out in the springtime that are great for foraging. So I have my eyes on a ramp's patch right now. Mm. Watch I was there last week and saw them just peeking out of the ground. So perhaps actually this weekend is the time to go check them out. They've probably grown enough that I could go harvest some to eat them. I'm excited to see the morels come out. Looking out on the forest, this is something, so I, for many years, I lived away from an area that had such a pronounced spring. And last year was my first year back, and seeing just the diversity of colors in the tree buds was astounding to me. Because I had, like, after leaving, I always thought about the fall as this period of time where there's this intense beauty that comes within the forests of our area. But the springtime is just as extraordinary. This, like, incredible pastel arrangement of colors. It's really, so that's something that I've just started seeing the very beginnings of, seeing the willow trees, seeing, I think maybe it's the red maples.
Yes.
Yeah. Like these colors. So yeah, very exciting. I mean, I love that there's snow on the ground right now too. Like love the winter time, but definitely the spring is a very special time.
Yeah. Well, I love that you brought that up about the colors, because as I said, we climbed the fire tower that's on the top of the peak in Ferncliff, and it does just give an incredible view from up and down the river all the way, you know, into Massachusetts and into the Catskills. But right around, you know, you're high enough up that you're actually looking down at the top of the canopy. And Brianna pointed out, she's like, what is that? And a whole swath of the forest was indeed bright red. And I kind of, it was like, I feel silly saying it out loud, but I had this flash of like, oh, that's why they're called red maples.
Totally. Yeah.
So that was very cool. Well, thank you both for that. And there's a couple more small things before we move sections of the show that I'm going to point out. And one is just because it's such a bizarre weirdo, it has to be said. And one of the early guests on the show was Anne Bloomfield, and she's a wildlife biologist with the Hudson Valley Farm Hub. And she's also a fellow bird enthusiast. And she recently spotted a crested caracara out by the Farm Hub, you know, kind of like further a little bit like West Hurley Zone. And I just cannot say to you how strange this is. If you don't know what a caracara has no business being within thousands of miles of here. They're a tropical raptor that usually comes into the United States, maybe right on the border of Arizona and Mexico, and then a little bit up into southern Texas, but that's it. They don't migrate. They should not be anywhere around here, but there is no mistaking one when you see one. They're an incredible looking bird, and they look like a hawk. They've got a big sharp beak and a yellow kind of skin face, and they've got huge big talons, but they behave like a vulture. Because they're more of a kind of a carrion and a generalist, and they tend to run around on the ground, and, you know, but they are technically actually a large tropical falcon. So they're a real mishmash of perception but they are very animated. When, you know, it's extremely rare that they're here, but when there's one around, they are not shy. They tend to perch way up on top. They have a beautiful crest. They have bright yellow legs and talons, and so they really, and they're black and white, and they're very prominent when they're around. So anyway, very unusual that there was a crested caracara around. I have no idea if it's been spotted again, but that is a good segue to say that, and this is still a little ways off, May 13th, but once a year, the Hudson Valley Farm Hub does a public birding day where they open it up, and, unfortunately, because it's a big, you know, operating farm, they are not generally open to the public. So sometimes people will see a really rare bird that's been spotted there and kind of come out and try to see it. And unfortunately, that's not always, conducive to the operations out there. But they set aside a day. So this is going to be from 7:30 a.m. till 4:30 p.m. on Tuesday, May 13th. And it's self-guided. You can show up at any time you want. And there's a whole loop. They have people at different stations to explain things. But, the birds last year were absolutely incredible there. And lots of tropical breeding, birds that have just returned from the rainforest. But also they have, and Anne in particular, have spent time rehabilitating native grassland habitats, which have become extremely rare. And so there's some birds like the bobolink and like the eastern meadowlark that are very unusual to see around here, but that have, it's kind of, if you build it, they will come kind of thing. And they have returned. And so there's certain species you're very unlikely to see other places that you can have a good chance of seeing if you head out there. So if you're interested, check that out. All right. Well, we're going to take a brief break and hear some words from the community, and then we'll rejoin you.
What does community radio mean to you?
Maybe when you're all together and you're all together on the radio and you're having fun and everyone's listening and they're just in it with you. It makes me feel happy.
Radio Kingston, many voices, one community.
Hi, I'm Forest Ranger Cameron Sweeney from the Department of Environmental Conservation. We're reminding all New Yorkers that a spring burn ban is now in effect. With a drier than normal winter, it's even more important people adhere to the ban through May 14th. Open burning of debris is the single largest cause of spring wildfires in the state. Wildfires are more likely to spread in warm, windy conditions.
I'm Kingston Mayor Steve Noble, and in the city of Kingston, we have a year-round burn ban, but backyard grills are fine. Any sort of cooking fire must never be left unattended.
For more information, go to dec.ny.gov.
Or click kingston-ny.gov/air quality.
Buongiorno, mi chiamo Leonisa Ardizzone.
Alessio Lombardi.
Maria Angelina Tuma.
Guy Greco.
Giovanni Vincenzo Ignazio Ioia, also known as Dr. John.
Alicia Hallam.
Giuseppe Famiglietti.
Nicolina Francis Famiglietti.
Antonio Pasquale Marmo.
With the hands.
Jenny Bella.
Jess Davis.
Ciao.
If it's meatless, it's sauce. If it's meat-based, it's gravy. And if it's Sunday, it's tutto Italiano.
We'd like to welcome guests from all over the world.
And Brooklyn.
To hear fantastic Italian music.
I love learning anything new about our Italian culture.
I love announcing what's going on with UCIF, our current events, our birthdays, and I love being on with my co-host. Yeah.
If we're not speaking Italian, we're speaking gabagool.
Holy cannoli! Yes.
That's Tutto Italiano, Sunday afternoons from 1 to 2.
Here on Radio Kingston.
AM 1490.
FM 107.9.
And anytime at radiokingston.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Nature Nuggets on Radio Kingston. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland. And we've been talking about just the dozens of amazing observations that are part of the emergence of spring. And we have, I'm really happy to introduce our guest in the studio today, Phil Green. Phil is the environmental specialist with the City of Kingston. And he has been working for a bit over a year, I believe, for the city after a career in the earth sciences, focusing on how landscapes develop through geologic time. And he's local, grew up in Esopus, but moved around quite a bit before settling back in Kingston. And he's bringing that background with him, well-equipped to help the city pursue its sustainability goals. And so, Phil, thank you for being here.
Yeah, no problem.
And before we're going to dive into, there's a really kind of impressive, almost dizzying array of sustainability initiatives that are being undertaken by the city. But I'd love to start with hearing a little bit about your story, just knowing that you were, grew up locally, but then went on a different path away, and now you've returned. And how did the calling to do this kind of work evolve for you?
Yeah, so, I mean, definitely, I would say the root of it all was growing up in Esopus and just hanging out in the woods there. I wouldn't say when I was younger that rocks specifically spoke to me, but the landscape down there, at least, was very heavily affected by the rock features. So when you'd walk back behind my folks' house, like where I grew up, there was sort of this topography of like ridges and then little ephemeral or vernal pools, little swamps, and then you have another ridge and then another vernal pool. And what this made for was like an incredibly dynamic place to go as a kid, because it's like you could go up to the little ridge top and then it's super dry. There's a hemlock forest, something like that. And you drop down into the vernal pools and there's salamanders and frogs and all kinds of critters to check out. I think probably through that early experience and interaction with nature, I caught a bug, I guess. Mm-hmm. And from there, going to university, I pursued that through studying the earth sciences. And that took me through many years of academic work and then also academic research, scientific research, that was very much involved with topics that are quite interesting, but maybe not so connected to our lived experience. For example, I was like studying how a mountain range came to form during the Cretaceous period. So it's like that's it was a truly interesting subject as a personal pursuit, but there was always a bit in me that felt like I was sort of missing out in terms of not interconnecting that understanding and that interest in nature with the way we live our lives and with sort of the human experience. So after a period of time doing that kind of work, I felt like I needed a change. Happened to coincide with a time when I was moving back to this area. So I started looking for work in sort of scientific work that had more of a connection with people. And luckily in this area, and I'm sure this has come up a fair bit with this program, is there's a ton of opportunities for that. Because we live in a very unique place where there's like relatively high density. There's a lot of us here, but there's also a lot of nature. And there's a lot of interconnection there and a lot of work sort of attempting to undo some of the damage that came from a previous period of industrialization. So there seemed to be ample opportunity, and I just stumbled into this job with the City of Kingston as their environmental specialist, which has turned out to be like one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me. This job it's so cool just because it's so dynamic. Like from one day to the next, I'm doing totally different things and interacting with different communities within the city. Sometimes I'm sitting at the computer and doing stuff that's much more akin to the scientific research I would have been doing in the past, like Excel spreadsheets and crunching numbers and things like that. But then other times, like this past week, going out on field trips and leading field, like geology field trips for high schoolers at Sojourner Truth State Park. So just really a lot of different things and just a really great time. I'm very happy with the way things turned out in terms of progress from, childhood interests into research and academia, and then back to being in this area and hopefully having some positive effects on our community.
Oh, that's a really great story to hear. And I think it's a good fit for you and for the city. And I mean, it's heartening too, just the fact that a city Kingston's size, 25,000 roughly something, has an environmental specialist. I'm guessing that isn't the case for a lot of similarly sized communities. I don't know.
Right. And I'm not the only one.
Right.
Right. I'm working with Julie Noble, who's got an even like broader umbrella over far more sustainability initiatives than I've got that I'm involved with, you know? Like it is really impressive.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, in our conversation before coming in for this interview right now, I think another thing that came up was that sustainability seems to be embedded in most of the projects that the city is undertaking. So it's not just the stuff that we're doing, it's the stuff that folks who are looking at housing in the city are doing. It's the city engineer is focused on it. Like it's part of the fabric of the city's government right now, which I think is incredible because, I mean, I think you described it like the more than human. Well, I mean, another way that I think about it is that it's like we often talk about this distinction between like human and nature, like the human world and the natural world, but they're like really integrated. So we can't really, from my perspective, like approaching sustainability as something that is focused on what's going on in the natural world and our relationship to it only gets us so far. We also need to have sustainable community and like a sustainable city. Yeah.
Thank you for articulating that. I would say that if one single theme has emerged from the past year of this program, it's the false boundaries and the delusional kind of that we create by thinking that humans are separate from nature.
Right.
And even here, whether you're deep in the, you know, woods or here in the middle of the most urban part of our community, there is no separation. And it's foolhardy for us and for the natural world to perpetuate the idea that there is.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to hear, because I know there's so many and we'll dig into to some of them, but what are some of the priority initiatives for the city of Kingston right now that you'd feel inspired to highlight?
So I guess I could start with the work that I'm most involved with, which is much more work that maybe it has positive effects locally, but it's the sort of larger scale trying to deal with greenhouse gas emissions and climate change stuff. So that's the kind of work that maybe we see real benefits here, but it's also about like understanding our responsibility on a larger scale. So we've been doing a fair bit of work trying to convert our vehicle fleet, so the municipal fleet, to electric vehicles, get a bunch of chargers installed throughout the city so that people can charge their cars. We're exploring converting over the diesel vehicles to this product that it's sort of like biodiesel called renewable diesel that has far fewer emissions. So those kinds of projects are like, the harder work, because it's stuff that I don't get the immediate like endorphin like rush of like going out on a field trip, but it's the stuff that I think in the bigger picture is quite helpful.
Yeah.
But I think that for me, the projects that are the ones that I think are really impressive here are the ones that have to do with, are you guys seeing something?
Just a whole bunch of vultures are streaming by.
Yeah, there's
migration is action.
Right,
it's happening over your shoulder. Sorry.
Just dozens of them.
Yeah. Like,
I love it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what? I mean, maybe these vultures are off to Sojourner Truth State Park right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think like that's the kind of stuff that I think is really impressive with what the city is doing. So recently the city acquired I think 70 some odd acre property down along the Rondout, heading out past Wilbur, up on the bluffs right there. Just seeing Sojourner Truth State Park form it was an incredible place when I was a kid. It was ruins. It was being actively taken over by the forest ecology and the animals and all of the, like, everybody who's there right now. But it was a place that also was always it had a tenuous existence. So to see that property established as a place that will stay protected is a really incredible thing. And I think the city of Kingston has like a pretty good there's a pretty strong focus on that, of trying to whatever areas there are that are still within the municipal boundaries that have relatively intact ecosystems, really trying to preserve those. And that's helpful. That extends beyond just the boundaries of those places. Like, for example, those turkey vultures, like or the bald eagles that I sometimes see flying in Kingston, like they might not be living right in our backyards or like in the heart of Midtown, but they're still interacting with this space because there's some area that's close by that is good for them. So I find that stuff really, I think that's really compelling. And then I think the work that the city's doing to make those areas more accessible through what, I guess for me, the big focus is on road improvement projects. I think that's the kind of work that's really catching my eye. And then actually I'm just going to start rambling now, actually, because there's so many good things. Yeah. I mean, I think also like a lot of the work with, or the focus on how we are to develop, and how we're trying to manage a housing crisis has been, I think, pretty commendable as well, because I mean, coming back to that notion of sustainability, it's like we have to talk about like sustainable communities. So if everyone can't stay here to enjoy these things like Sojourner Truth State Park and stuff like that, then we're not really talking about a sustainable system. So I think, yeah, there's a fair number of projects. I could dive deep into any of them if you'd like as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I think what you'd be inspired by, I appreciate what you said sort of about, you know, you're focusing in on some really pragmatic, small scale, local things, but then also having the picture of, you know, the big long-term global picture. And certainly with our national government being what it is, and, you know, with the kind of largely failure of international climate policies, you know, the progress that's happening on the city levels, you know, where people are actually is really super significant. And that's where a lot of this kind of transformation to renewable energies and, you know, adaptation is happening, because that in and of itself is a very good thing. And so if Kingston can be, you know, a bit of a leader in that space, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned well, obviously, you know, trying to reduce greenhouse gases and going for solar. But I know there's sort of the flip side of that coin is also sort of the adaptation, you know, preparing for change that's inevitable part, right? And I know being on the waterfront of a tidal estuary, there's some big projects, you know, kind of related to that as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's definitely a fair bit of the work. It seems like I think there's a pretty good balance in terms of like work to adapt, but also work to try and reduce whatever the negative effects that are that come from climate change. But yeah, the adaptation work is pretty interesting because there are a fair number of places along the Rhondda on the Hudson in Kingston that are sort of people hold near and dear to them, right? Like Kingston Point Beach is like a really special place. But it also happens to be the highest point is just a few feet above what is essentially sea level, right? Because the Hudson is a tidal estuary.
Yeah.
So with sea level rise, which is expected to be like relatively significant, I don't know if you guys have been down to like the Maritime Museum and they have that great, they've got like a measuring stick essentially that shows like the highs from Sandy and Irene from storms, so like storm surge highs, but then also shows relative to those what sea level rise will be in like 50 or 100 years. And it's a lot. Like it's not like these places that were built for the stability of some, or what was a perceived stability at a different time, whether it's like down in the Strand where everything was built around shipbuilding and having very quick, easy access to the water, or Kingston Point Beach, where it was built for recreation. These places, we're going to need to adapt those places to take into account the expected sea level rise. So there's already been work done, for example, at the wastewater treatment plant they've got like storm gates set up there. So with sea level rise and then the storm surges that will come with storms after sea level rise, they've got it set up where it's like they can basically prevent flooding up to like, I don't know, I want to say like 10 feet above sea level, something where it's like pretty significant. And then down in there are additional projects that are sort of still in the works. Like, so at Kingston Point Beach, there are plans to terrace the beach. And the idea here is that as opposed to having a situation where as the sea level rises, as the Hudson gets higher, we just lose more and more of the beach, and presumably erosion will change and that'll affect the beach. It'll become something very different. And that's not, all right, I would have to say, that's not the worst thing in the world. Like it would just be, we wouldn't have the control over it.
Yeah.
And this is a space where it's like, maybe we do want to have control over it because it's a recreational area. So the idea, instead of allowing sea level rise to take its course and transform the beach, we're going to terrace it so that there can be active portions of the beach at different stages as the water rises, which hopefully means that we have like an initial capital investment where we do this work and it's maybe a little intrusive. There'll be a period of time where we can't go to the beach, but then hopefully it means that beach is pretty set for whatever the next 50, 100 years. Mm-hmm. So, there are other projects like that where this is something that I've run into with this work generally, is that we're at this time period where we're not just talking about like reforming situations. There's like a bit of like a revolution with the way we have to deal with this stuff. Mm-hmm. And that can be hard, but it's like, hopefully if we do it thoughtfully and do it with as much of an understanding of the consequences of our actions as possible, then what we'll come out with is something good. So Kingston Point Beach is one where it's like, it'll look different from the way it is now, and people love it right now. So that might be hard, but it's also, hopefully it means that we get to enjoy it for much longer than we would have before.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I know you just really lit up when you talked about the, taking kids to Sojourner Truth. And so I'd love to hear you talk a bit about some of the like environmental education programs. I've heard about like a junior naturalist program. And yeah, talk a little bit about what kind of things the city is doing to engage young folks into the natural world.
Yeah. So that's sort of where I was going before was like, this job is great because it changes every day. So another person who works, I'm housed in Parks and Recreation. So I have this sort of, I've got one foot in that kind of a world. But there's another employee of the City of Kingston, Casey Keegan. She's really, she spearheads the environmental education stuff. And she has tons of programs like Junior Naturalist. We're going to be doing kayaking in the summertime. Actually, when the spring hits, we're going to have, we do a fair bit of programming with the public schools and other, any school that's interested. But one of the really fun ones that I got to do last year and we'll be doing this year as well with Casey is we take out the like elementary school students down to Kingston Point Beach and split them up into groups, and some of them will get into kayaks. Most of it's their first time ever getting into a kayak, and we kayak out and talk about the industrial history there and the ecosystem. Then other kids will actually, we have big seine nets, and we'll go out and we'll do big swoops in the sort of in the shallows off of the beach and pick up all the different fish that are there. And that's a really cool one because we do it in the springtime, but then later in the summer there's opportunities to go do it as well. And what you end up finding is that you catch these, like in particular herring, which are an anadromous species. They spend part of their lives out in the ocean and then other parts up here in the estuary. But in the springtime, we'll be catching those herring and they'll be tiny little babies. And then later in the summer, you catch them and they've grown up. They're like on their way to being adults. And every once in a while, you catch really exotic fish. Like there's, I think it's called a needlefish. That was extraordinary to see that. And the thing is, in the end, if the net comes up with one fish or maybe even just comes up with a brick, like they don't catch anything, for all the kids, it's so cool because they've all got their waders on. They've crawled out into the water. Like it's just the whole experience is, I mean, just anytime for me interacting with the environment, especially when it's with other people, is a really special thing. So
yeah, what an amazing thing that a local city government is offering that kind of opportunities for kids in public schools, because those are the kind of things you. Yeah, open your eyes to where you live and that you may just never forget, or that can spark an interest in something that snowballs into a life's path.
Like, totally.
That feels just so important.
Yeah, I was feeling that so much with the high school field trips this past week, where it's like this. So I have this long time of being a geologist, but I don't ever remember in high school, learning anything about rocks or the things that I later found to be like really interesting about them. So to go out and like, who knows how many of the high schoolers really picked up on this, but I was enthusiastic, you know, like I was like there, that park is really exceptional for many different reasons, but the geology there is pretty extraordinary. Like the sheer quantity of fossils in those rocks is like, I've never seen anything like it. And that's one that's good because it's like, well, even if geology isn't your forte or your interest, like I feel like basically anybody when they see a fossil is like, this is really cool.
Yeah. You don't have to be young to have childlike wonder.
Yeah. Even if it's just like a shell, it's still like, wow, this is so beautiful. Yeah.
And it's not all kids, right? There are adult nature walks and experiences that are right.
Yeah. So this is another thing that Casey really focuses on, and I've helped out with in the past. But yeah, we have adult nature walks. So those programs, they actually, it's not confined to the City of Kingston. It'll be like everyone meets up in Kingston and then drives off together to different locations in the area. And those walks tend to be, I think there's a variety of like difficulties, but they tend to be pretty relaxed, like gentle grades. Like maybe you'll go to Esopus Meadows. We went there last year, which is an incredible place. And sometimes even there'll be folks who will come who have like a specific knowledge about that area, so they'll help guide the nature walks. And yeah, I think, I mean, I'm not sure if I brought it up before, but we also will be hosting kayaking on every Saturday morning this summer, and then I think one or two Friday evenings each month. And those are open to people of all ages. And we have kayaks, so you don't even need a kayak. You can just sign up and come on down. And I mean, it's extraordinary. What, like, cool, kayaking from Kingston Point Beach, yeah, is really nice.
What a cool offering. What? How would people find out about that if they're interested?
So we just recently switched over to a new website that should be very intuitive and easy for the Parks and Rec department. And it's called Rec Desk. So it'd be kingston.recdesk.com is, okay, the website. And on that website is listed all the different programming that the Parks and Recreation Department offers. So a lot of that is going to be like softball and like, yeah, like basketball, those, mm-hmm, kinds of things. But then there's also all the environmental education stuff that's open to the public. Yeah.
Wow, that is such a great thing to offer the community. Just Brianna and I yesterday took two walks. We did the Ferncliff Forest, and then we went down to Tivoli Bays, and it was just, you know, saying, oh, we got to get some kayaks, but, you know, they're expensive, and then transporting them. And so the fact that the city is offering up access to kayaks for, yeah, people is a really big deal. Awesome. Well, we're going to take one more break to hear some further words from the community, and then we'll be back to wrap up this conversation.
Hi, I'm Devin, the Direct Service and Outreach Coordinator for the Kingston Emergency Food Collaborative, KEFC. We're looking for volunteers to help us with our direct service initiative that provides groceries to folks in our community who are struggling with food insecurity. You can volunteer to deliver or pack groceries. Grocery deliveries are the second and last Wednesday of each month. On the second and last Tuesday, there are packing shifts from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. On the second and last Wednesday, there are packing shifts from 9:30 to 11 a.m., and delivery pickup is at 11:15 a.m. If you'd like to volunteer on an occasional or recurring basis, visit kingstonemergencyfood.com.
Radio Kingston.
Muchas voces.
Muchas voces.
Muchas voces.
Una comunidad.
Hola, amigues. I am Mariel Fiori. Every Monday through Friday morning from 10 to 11 a.m., we have La Voz con Mariel Fiori here at Radio Kingston. It's an inspiring hour of interviews, commentary, good music, current issues, and information. Knowledge is power. And it's all en español. La Voz with Mariel Fiori. Every weekday morning from 10 to 11 a.m. Here on Radio Kingston, AM 1490, FM 107.9, or anytime at radiokingston.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Nature Nuggets. I'm your host, Laurel Sutherland. And today we are talking with Phil Green, who's an environmental specialist with the City of Kingston. And we've been talking about just the incredible diversity of global scale to local offerings and initiatives that the city's undertaking. And I'm looking at this huge list. There's so much of other things that the city does. And with just kind of a handful of minutes left, you had just mentioned, Phil, the Rec Desk, Kingston, as being a resource that folks can learn about all the different things that are open to the public. But I know there's a couple other things that you want to make sure to highlight, including the upcoming Earth Fair in early May.
Yeah. So on May 10th, and this Earth Fair has been going on for quite some time, but we're hosting the Earth Fair down at Tierra Gallo Park on May 10th. I think it's like 9 to 5 that day. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. There's a lot of different vendors. There's going to be music. Clearwater is, they're setting up, they've got like a pretty large list of musicians who are going to be performing throughout the day at like a stage out in the park, and then also using the, I think it's called the Gray Barn, that barn that's right next to the Maritime Museum. There's going to be a bunch of children's activities. There's a paper shredding operation that'll be there. So if you want your paper shredded, you can bring it down.
Historically appropriate activity.
Yeah, so I think the Earth Fair is going to be pretty incredible. Just before that, I think 2 days before, on the 8th, we're going, in collaboration with Scenic Hudson, we're going to be doing a big group bike ride starting at Rainbow Snake Dream Garden down by Rondout Gardens off of 9W and going up to Sojourner Truth State Park. So that's following the Kingston Green Line, which is a really, for me, coming back to this area was the most shocking thing, coming into Kingston and seeing that you could safely bike in parts of the city. So we'll be using the Green Line to go on this long bike ride. And throughout the summer, there's always incredible activities. But I think kicking off the new season with the Earth Fair and with this bike ride, I think is going to be really good.
That's great. And I'm hoping maybe we could say a little bit more. I know I first became kind of aware of your work around sort of bicycle advocacy and access and making things easier. And yeah, as a relatively new arrival, 4 years or something in Kingston, coming into town with the Midtown Linear Park, you know, bike path, and then, you know, Broadway freshly done, has been a major part of my experience, at least of the warmer months of the city. And I know there's more to come and things that you're working on as far as, you know, making it a real bikeable town.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's an ongoing project. It's, I'm sure as most people know, it's surprisingly difficult to really convert from our pretty long history of not focusing on pedestrian and bike safety towards focusing on it. But the folks who've been involved with it here have been really, really good pushing for, improved bike facilities, improved pedestrian facilities. And I'm really just stepping in and following in their footsteps. So we, through Parks and Rec, we have what we call community bike rides, which is an evolution of a program that used to exist here called Slow Rides, hosted by Bike Friendly Kingston, where on Thursday evenings, every other Thursday evening in the summertime, we just go on these like hour and a half long mm-hmm. bike rides around town. And they're so slow that sometimes it's more of like a balancing act. Like it's like really like you could be at any level and come out on them. And it's just, it's really nice because it's the roads are still, of course, they're still not as safe as they should be for bikes. But when you're with a group of people, it feels a lot better. And it gives you a taste of like that liberatory feeling that you can get when the street becomes a place where you can exist in it without being in like an armored box, like a car. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I want to highlight a couple things that are just, we've got just a handful of minutes left now that we are, you know, even if this morning doesn't totally feel like it, there's no putting spring back in the box. It is here. We've been moving towards the warm months, and there's so many different opportunities. We had a guest, Omari Washington, on a few weeks ago, who's the executive director of Wild Earth, but I know they're taking registrations for summer camps and different outdoor opportunities for kids. And then I always promote, every Friday, I get the Hudson River Almanac email put together by Tom Lake with the DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, which is just an incredible state agency, government program. And they're doing a whole series of DEC summer camps that combine environmental education, hunter education programs, and outdoor recreation into fun adventures. And so they get, you know, kids can get presented with all kinds of challenges and introduced to environmental concepts and have a chance to practice outdoor skills, camping, canoeing, all that kind of stuff, immersed in nature. So those are just examples of a couple of different, you know, awesome opportunities if you have kids or young folks in your life that we could, you know, you could sign up for now. And I wanted to remind folks that if you caught just a part of this conversation with Phil Green and want to hear the rest of it, this show, like all of our others, will be archived at radiokingston.org under Nature Nuggets. We also have a growing Instagram presence. So the handle there is HV Nature Nuggets. And we do posts and update on episodes throughout the weeks. And then lastly, if you are inspired, if you have a suggestion for someone you'd love to see on the show as a guest, or some burning nature questions that we might be able to help answer or find an expert who could, you can contact the show directly through email, which is naturenuggets@radiokingston.org. And so I just want to say thank you so much, Phil Green, for all the work you do and for coming on the show this morning. And also, Brianna, thanks for being a triple repeat visitor and for giving so much support to this show over the last year.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And go 1 year.
Yeah. All right, well, take care.
Oh, how wild, yeah, wild, ooh. give myself to you completely.